You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
All right, hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are joined today by a special guest, a former Sonics All-Star, who is now coming back to Key Arena this weekend to lead his three-headed monsters in the Big Three playoffs. So thank you so much for joining us, Rashard Lewis.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I think it's fitting that you're coming back to play at Key Arena. I looked this up. No player played more regular season games at Key Arena than you did after
really?
You renovated it.
I had no idea about that. But yeah, I'm excited about just coming back to Seattle, get to play in Key Arena. Haven't been here in Seattle in, I think, 10 plus years. So, man, you know, just flying in, just looking around while as I'm landing on the plane, just kind of see what, you know, what I missed and what wasn't here when I was here.
Yeah, I'm sure it looks very different than you
very
remember.
Different. Still looks good, though.
Did it bring back any memories for you?
Oh, a lot of memories. I mean, I was just from the day I got drafted here, being a rookie on the team, you know, with the practice facility, it's not there no more, obviously, but the Key Arena is still there. And, you know, everything just from living on Mercer Island to Queen Anne, just overall everything, just bringing back, everything's starting to come back to me.
All right, well, we want to run through that a little bit later in the show, but first up, let's talk about the Big Three. And I think one very cool thing is that you are paying for children 13 or under to come to the games if they come with an accompanying
right.
adult. So what kind of spurred that, and how do people take advantage of that?
It was more of, you know, when I got into the league, my kids was obviously begging me to continue to play basketball, be in the NBA, but I was able to join a Big Three league, and it was my daughter was one of the main people that was forcing me to continue to play basketball. And, you know, it's just that quality time you spend with your kids, or if it's a niece or nephew. I think it's great for kids nowadays that, you know, need positive role models in their life for the future. But my kids was pressing me to continue to play, and I thought, them coming to the games or going to the game with them, I thought it was a great idea for not only other parents or uncles or aunts to, you know, it's summertime, a lot of kids are not in school, and it gives them that good family quality time to spend with their family. Not only that, watching good basketball from some of their favorite players.
So were your kids a driving factor in playing in the Big Three?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, I still wanted to play basketball. I still had a little fire burning under me that maybe NBA, but this is almost perfect for guys like me that still wants to play basketball at a high level, but maybe not at that level with 21-year-old kids. And the Big Three is something, you know, it's very professional, a lot of first class everything, and, you know, you got good players in here, so it's very competitive.
Yeah, what can fans expect when they come out to the Big Three?
They can expect to be competitive and not an all-star game. Guys are playing to win, playing together as a team, and overall, you know, just the competition and us competing is what makes the league so much fun.
Yeah. Are you expecting, with this weekend being the playoffs, the intensity to increase?
Oh, yeah. It increased a lot because you can tell as the weeks went on, the intensity went up. Guys started getting their legs on them, getting in better shape. And you know, like last weekend, teams had to either win to get into the playoffs. If you lose, you're eliminated. Teams was playing to position themselves from 1 through 8. The higher you finish, the better seed. Obviously, the better for the end of the year.
And those games are much more intense.
Oh, yeah. Way more intense. And I'm sure this weekend is going to be even to a whole nother level because of the fact that you win, you go to the championship. You lose, you're playing for third place. And I think everybody wants to go to that championship game.
Yes. So for you, playing in Seattle, you're going to be playing now with one of your ex-teammates as your coach,
right,
and Gary Payton. What is that like?
That's a little different because last time when I got drafted here, I was playing with Gary Payton and not him coaching me. Well, he was still a player's coach.
I don't know. He probably acted like a coach.
He still was a coach telling you what to do, where to go, and how to do it when I did play with him. But now he's a coach. But nothing's changed with Gary. When I played with him here in Seattle, you know, when he got on the court, competitor, want to win, you know, very fiery guy, talk trash, but it was all out of because he wants to win the game. And now I'm seeing a different Gary, even though he's a coach, but he's the same Gary, very competitive, wants to win, still fiery. And that's good because when you have a coach that does that, it makes the players play when you step out on the court.
Yeah, I mean, how would you describe him as a coach?
How would I describe him? Still talking trash to opposing teammates, same Gary as a player. Gets mad when you don't defend, And Gary was the glove. He was a defensive player. I remember in the huddle last weekend, he came to the bench and he told us, I think somebody got an easy backdoor layup, and he called a timeout, and he was like, now, I don't care about you missing shots. You know, everybody misses shots. But that, when you giving up easy baskets on defense, that's what makes me mad. That's what really gets under my skin. And that's what the type of player he was. And so he's the same guy that he was as a coach.
What's the difference from in basketball terms going from a 5-on-5 full court game to a 3-on-3 half court game?
Big difference. I mean, it was took some adjusting getting to, even though, you know, I worked out before the first game of the season and played a little 3-on-3. But it was still different when you got out there and you're playing against other NBA guys and it got competitive. It's not very much help on the defensive end of the court. You got to man up. You got to be a great man-to-man defender. You can help a little bit, but if you shade over too much and help, then your guy's either going to be wide open for a jump shot or somebody's going to be wide open getting a layup. So, and not only that, when you get a rebound and take it off the rim, you're only taking it back behind the three-point line, then you're turning around trying to either shoot it or get back to the basket. So it's not – run up and down. So that was took a little adjusting getting to. And then when you take the ball after made shot, you can dribble the ball in after the referee touch it. Instead of passing in, you can dribble it in from the top of the key. So it's a little different. And it's not, you know, I know a lot of guys may have not conditioned themselves to thinking they don't have to be in shape for half court. But it's more physical when you're playing half court because you're not doing a lot of running around people. You have to go through people. And that's why they put the hand checking in.
That style where there's not a lot of help defense, mm-hmm. does that mean a lot of favorable one-on-one matchups for you, the ability to play in the post against smaller defenders?
Yeah, and that's a big reason why I drafted Kwame Brown to play the big, the center, because I know I'm tall, I'm 6'10", and I didn't want to be a center because I'm pretty thin. I don't want to be wrestling down there with guys. And so I felt like if getting Kwame Brown keeps me at a matchup problem to where if I have a big on me, I can go out on the perimeter, shoot jump shots, or try to take him off the dribble. Or if I have a small on me, which I just go into the post, which was like my bread and butter when I came here, when I was playing here in Seattle. I was one of the best post-up players, and I did a lot of posting up. And, you know, I do that in the league as well. But, you know, it's hard to double team, but at the same time, you can't. There's no defensive 3 seconds sitting in the paint, so guys can shade your way a little bit. And that's when you just have to be, you know, be a smart player and hit the wide open for the jump shot.
So speaking of your time in Seattle, if you had to put together kind of the perfect big three team of players that you played with on the Sonics, who mm-hmm. do you think would be on that team?
My big three team. So it's five players to each team on a big three. Okay. So can I name five players
yeah,
instead
for
of three?
Sure.
All right. Gary Payton at the point guard.
Okay.
Ray Allen, of course. Sean Kemp. Myself and Detlef Shrimp.
Nice. Yeah. Being able Shrimp, to spread the court.
I had to put Dale Shrimp because I mean he was not only he was a great basketball player, but he was almost like a guy that really helped me out, took me under his wing.
Really?
And, you know, my rookie year showed me I was playing to guard him and he was guarding me every day and he would stop and tell me what I'm doing wrong, what I need to do. He really helped me out a lot my first year in the
That's
league.
That's awesome. Well, I think about you and Detlef and then also Sam Perkins, who was on the Sonics
Big
in the 90s, as three players who kind of ushered in the modern era of big guys who could shoot and
ball.
Spread the floor.
Exactly right. And Detlef Shrimp was one of those guys that was like a hybrid that can go out on the perimeter, dribble, pick and roll, or go post you up because he was a big guy.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from Dallas Shrimp.
That's awesome. Well, so I want to talk through. There's a thing that we've been wanting to do here on the podcast. I call it an oral history. He hates that. But of basically chronologically talking through kind of some of the key points of your career. Mm-hmm. So before then, Big Three, Sunday, the playoffs at Key Arena.
Right.
Rashard Lewis back at Key Arena. Other former Sonics players, Kendall Gill, Brian Scalabrine from the Northwest.
Yep.
Is there anybody who I'm missing?
Reggie Evans.
Yeah, I was about to jump in there with that. Your guy, Reggie Evans.
My man.
I was curious before we get to that. You mentioned Ray. Have you had any conversations with him about playing in the Big Three?
Yeah, most definitely. Actually, Ray was about to join the Big Three before we did the press conference. And, you know, I don't think things worked out and he didn't join up. But I have still been talking to him, being him a good friend. And once Jason Williams went down at the first game of the season, so I had to find another guy, and I didn't have to go to the draft to pick up another guy because he was a captain of the team and he got hurt, so I was able to go out and pick another, you know, former player. And Ray was one of those guys I called, and he was like, you know, he would, but he had his schedule. He had things that he had already planned for during the summer that he couldn't do it, and maybe he would, you know, get into it for next season. So That's why I was. He's a guy that's on my radar because I know this league will be a lot better next year. Guys are going to go out and recruit people. People are going to come in and want to play because they see how great the league is. So I know I'm going to have to get my team is going to have to get better, and Ray is going to be one of those guys. I hope he has his summer cleared next summer. Well, that'd be awesome. His schedule cleared next summer.
Yeah, that'd be awesome to see that combination reunited again. Oh, yeah. So as we do this kind of oral history, I want to call it the walk down memory lane. You got to start at the draft.
Mm-hmm.
You enter the NBA out of high school, expecting to be drafted in the first round.
Right.
Your hometown Houston Rockets have 3 first round picks,
yep.
And instead pass on you to take Michael Dickerson, Bryce Drew, and
Mirzan Turkoglu, or something like that.
That's right. I was going to ask whether you could name all 3 of those guys, but I'm sure you do. Yeah, and so you're sitting there in the green room waiting for your name to be called as it gets into the second round, and finally at the 32nd pick, it's the Sonics who take you. What was that experience like?
Man, it was it was obviously the best experience of my life because I got drafted into the NBA,
yes.
But also probably one of the worst experiences because I felt like
yes.
My dreams was being shattered right in front of my face. You know, obviously I came out of high school and I already knew the rules that if you get an agent, you can't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get drafted in the second round, you're not guaranteed a contract. So I was told I would be drafted in the first round, most likely lottery, top 20 pick maybe. But the one home, my hometown team, the Houston Rockets, had 3 picks in the first round, and they told me that if I'm there, that they'll get me with one of those picks.
Really?
They told me to my face. And, you know, I'm a kid. You know,
yes.
I'm not like a grown man that knows the business side of things. I didn't know yet.
Yes.
So I was excited about that, and, you know, I just felt like I was going to be coming back home to play. But those 3 picks went by, and my name wasn't called, and then – you know, I was upset, but at the same time, I was like, all right, you know, I'll just sit here and hopefully I can get drafted into the first round because I already knew in the back of my mind that the second round is not guaranteed. And as the picks went on, and I'm just sitting there and I'm like, you know, speechless more than anything.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep everything inside so I won't show, you know, no bad body language or facial expressions. And got close to the end of the first round. I think it was the last pick in the first round. And I just got up from the table because I can feel myself getting emotional. So I just got up from the table. I went to the back, went to the restroom, and I was just sat back there. I started, you know, tears started coming down my face. I started crying a little bit, and somebody come busting into the restroom. It's like, yo, come out, come out. You about to get picked. And I'm like, what? They're like, you about to get drafted. You got to come out. So I'm in the bathroom. I'm trying to wipe my tears and clean my face up. You know, I didn't want my eyes to be red, come out looking like I was crying. So I'm trying to clean myself up, and then I go back out there, and it was like the Seattle. You know, obviously I got drafted by the Seattle Supersonics,
yeah.
Which is a team I didn't work for, I didn't talk
yeah.
to. So it was a blessing more than anything that they drafted me. And when it was the year that we had a lockout, but when they drafted me, you can hear in my interview, you can tell that I was emotional, and
yeah.
I was obviously in the back crying because when they was asking me questions, you can tell I had that voice to where
yes.
it wasn't that normal voice, you know what I'm saying? You can tell I was really upset, but at the same time, I was excited about being drafted, and now I feel like I went in the second round. Everything was up to me to go back and bust my butt,
yes.
work hard, and try to get a job in the NBA,
yes.
just get, you know, just to make a team.
Did you have any thoughts about Seattle when you were drafted here?
Not before I got drafted, but once I got drafted, I knew they had Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, and I think it had just went to the finals a year before that, lost to the Bulls in the finals in 97, I think. And, you know, I know they had George Karl. He had just left, went to Milwaukee. So I knew they had a good team that was on like a 3-4 seasons in a row where they won 50 or 60 plus, you know, wins. So I knew that was a good team. But when I came, George Karl ended up leaving and things changed a little bit. It was a lockout year, so I got drafted and locked out, and we didn't start till January. We didn't start practice in January, so I think that lockout actually helped me make a team, gave me a couple months to work on my game and play against real NBA players back home before training camp even started.
All right, so 2 things. Number 1, did you know where you were going to go to college? Had you
yeah,
not?
I had 2 schools narrowed down. It was Florida State and the University of Kansas. Crazy though, because the reason why I was Florida State, I'm being in Houston, Texas, I was a big time football fan. I loved the Florida State Seminoles, was in love with Charlie Ward, and that's the only reason why I wanted to go to Florida State, because I was a Seminoles football fan. And I was like, well, they're in the ACC, so you know, you got Duke and you got these other schools that I can get looked at. I would be playing against top competition, but I was in love with Florida State just because of that. And I grew up around football being in Texas, and that was pretty cool though.
And then to go back to sort of what you were saying about I need to bust my butt to make the team, do you feel like you would not have had the career that you had if you did go in the first round?
Yes, because if I win the first round, then that obviously mean I was getting drafted by the Houston Rockets. And that probably was the best thing that ever happened to me, is to not get drafted by the Houston Rockets. Not saying that the Rockets is a bad team. I think they're a great organization. But just the fact that me getting away from home, being a teenager, 18 years old, 19 years old. So I think if I would have stayed home, I may have not had a successful career that I've had playing 17 years in the league and, you know, playing for so long. I think I would have had a lot of distractions. It's just a number of things when you're a kid. You focus, but you're not 100% focused. And I think me coming to Seattle, totally far away from home, was able to ground me and really focus on not only life off the court, but being a good basketball player, because there was nothing else for me to do. I had no friends, no family. Well, I had friends within teammates and stuff like that, but I was still a kid. I'm talking about guys that are 23, 24, 25. So these guys are going home to their wives or their girlfriends or going to the club. And, you know, obviously I was 18 years old. I couldn't get in the club in Seattle. I think it was like one club, I think it was called DV8 a long time ago. I remember that club because I was all hype. Yeah, I get to go out because, you know, we couldn't go out here. It was 21 and up. And I think they had juice in there. They were serving us lemonade and all kind of stuff. But man, me and my boys, we had so much fun. That was our spot for like 2 years until I got to turn 21.
That's great. Let's jump ahead to the 2000 playoffs. You'd played a little bit as a rookie, even started some games,
yeah,
and then kind of come off the bench regularly your mm-hmm. second year, move into the starting lineup at the end of that year,
right,
and kind of have a breakthrough playoff series right. against Utah. What was that experience like?
Man, that was, like you said, it was a breakthrough. I think that's what really started my career off mm-hmm. was that playoff series, because, you know, I came off the bench throughout the year, played a little bit of minutes here and there. But showed flashes of athleticism and just, you know, just playing hard and being a role player, doing good at that. And I don't know, for some reason, I started in the Utah series, the first round of playoffs. I don't remember if somebody got hurt. Maybe it was Billy Owens. Or I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I think that was when you started as a rookie. But yeah, the end of the year was just kind of a new lineup. Like,
okay, that's what it was.
Laz Burrell was playing.
And then at the end of the year. Yeah. But it was in the playoffs and I just remember just playing hard, rebounding, getting tip dunks, offensive rebounds, and nice. Just knocking down the open three-pointer on the weak side, playing off of, you know, obviously the main guys. And I don't, you know, I didn't go out there like thinking I got to get a new deal or I want to be the man, I'm trying to go score because it's a playoffs. I just went out there and just played hard with energy.
Nice.
And that's all I did. And then after that, it was like, yo, this kid has a lot of potential. And it was in the playoffs, and some people fold, I guess, in the playoffs. They play worse or be a little nervous. I played better. And I think that's when my career actually started, that playoff series against the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, you know, we've definitely seen the potential of just being Sonics fans and have been excited about you being here. But that was the moment where it's like, okay, this can really be a thing.
Yeah. And now after that series, I went home to myself and kind of like, you know, was surprised because, you know, not only that, playing on TV, a lot of family and friends finally got a chance to see me play. And it was just like, yo, I just competed with Karl Malone, you know, John Stockton, yeah, you know, Hornacek, what is it, Russell, Ostertag. And I wasn't scared, you know, like I wasn't scared of him. I went out there and I played hard. So it was more of a confident booster for me, knowing that I was able to go out there and compete against these guys on a playoff level.
Yeah. Okay, so then fast forward, you start to blossom into even more of a star. And then at the trade deadline in 2003, mm-hmm. the Sonics trade Gary Payton, kind of the cornerstone of the team,
right,
to Milwaukee for Ray Allen.
Right. They traded, like you said, they traded Gary Payton, which was the face of the franchise, the city of Seattle. You know, a lot of people was really upset about that, you know, including myself. But at the same time, it was also a blessing, not only for the team or the franchise, but for me. You know, when Ray came to the team, me and him, you know, was really good friends. And I picked up so much off of him. He would sit in the locker room and us as young guys and tell us stories about playoffs or college or basketball. And we would just sit there and listen to the veteran. And you know, doing and a lot of things rubbed off because you would see him get to the gym 2 hours early, getting shots up, working on his game, lifting weights. Or even on a game day, he's a first person at the arena getting shots up. Then he goes in the locker room, mentally starts preparing. And me and Damian Wilkins, guys like Reggie Evans, Luke Rittenau, Nick Collins, you know, we saw all of this. And it rubbed off on us. We started coming to the gym early, working on our game, getting to the arena early day of the game, getting shots up. During the summertime, he was the one that got me riding bikes. I got a cycle bike to ride around, conditioning wise. We would work out with Dwight Dobb, the trainer, during the time. I mean, it was a number of things that he put into us as younger guys. He would basically tell us, you have to continue to work on your game, and what you eat, what you put in your body is what you're going to get out on the court. So he was one of those veteran guys that not only helped me, but I think everybody that was with us on the Sonics team around that time.
So that kind of development of the young guys culminates in 2004-05. You're an all-star for the first time.
And if you look at it, when he first came, we got better.
Mm-hmm.
Every summer we worked on our game. We got better the following year. We was a pretty good team. Even when Nate became the coach, we played well together. You know, we almost, before the three ball, it was like us mm-hmm. and Phoenix yep. Suns that started the small ball with Vladimir Ivanovich, myself, Ray Allen, Luke Rittenhouse. We were shooting threes all over the place.
And yeah, you kind of had that spread pick and roll.
We had that spread pick and roll, yeah. And I think that's the way the game is today. But I remember us in Phoenix, we had a good year that year. But we was two of the top teams in the league, and that was with the small ball.
Yeah, so win the Northwest Division and then win a playoff series for the first time since, I think, 98.
Yeah, we beat Sacramento in the first round.
Yeah, and then San Antonio, it's a hard-fought six-game series.
Right.
Lose game six on Ray Allen mm-hmm. missing at the buzzer, and with you on the sidelines at that point
due
to a toe injury.
I
what stands out looking back on that season and that team?
You were such a young team, and we took the Spurs to game six,
yeah.
Which I think they won it that year. Did they win it that year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was a point where the Spurs was dominant.
Yes.
If it wasn't the Spurs, it was the Lakers. It was the championship trophy was going back and forth between those two teams. And, you know, even though we lost in the second round, but even though we was upset about losing, but we felt like we competed.
Yeah.
With such a young team. I think Desmond Mason was on that team as well. We went out there and competed against those guys, and we felt – obviously, we didn't feel good about losing the series, but we felt good about going into the summer and going into next year that we competed, took the best team and one of the best teams in the NBA to six games.
Yeah.
We thought that was great.
It kind of reminds me, I know people talk about, what's that Knicks team from the 70s that so many people have these memories about, like the 79 Knicks or something?
Yeah, they won the championship in, I think, 69 and 73, 74 maybe, 70 and 74.
But that team, the 04-05 Sonics, was, I mean, maybe this is just my age, but it was like we had the run in the 90s, we're very excited, and then there was kind of a lull, and it felt like everybody really came around the team in 2005.
Right.
The personalities really stood out. We just liked everybody on the team. Mm-hmm. I remember Danny Fortson.
Yeah.
Right? Love Danny Fortson.
I remember he would get in the game, and they had that little choo-choo horn thing. Man, Danny became a fan favorite. I mean, when he got here and he made our team. He boosted our team level
because
you know, he was a rebounder. He was a bruiser. He was that tough guy that we needed down low because we, you know, we was labeled as a soft team because we was jump shooters.
Yeah.
And when you have a jump shooting team, you're labeled soft. But when Danny came, it was like, there go the toughness. And a lot of people really loved it. You know, we liked it. And it seemed like the chemistry just worked. Everything came together. It was great.
Yeah,
fun times.
I mean, it was the last great Sonics team.
Man, and then it was. And I swear, when the year I left, it's because Ray was traded.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they drafted Durant, I think Jeff Green.
Yep.
Not sure that year. Westbrook came the following year.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I was excited about, obviously, we didn't have a good season. Excited about, you know, having a high pick in the draft to get Durant. And then later on in the draft, they'd be like, Ray Allen traded to Boston Celtics. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. What is going on now? And then, you know, I'm thinking about, like, I've been in 9 years. I'm at a point in my career where I'm getting into my prime. And I wanted to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like they was restarting over. They was rebuilding the whole franchise, the team. And I was in a position to where I wanted to go out and compete, get in the playoffs and compete for a championship. And I just felt like with Ray being traded, it was a perfect time for me to move on and let them, you know, rebuild their franchise.
With that rebuilding, did they even make you an offer that summer? Did they try?
Yes, okay. Yes, they most definitely made an offer. I met with them midnight. That was the first team I met with because I really wanted to be back in Seattle at midnight. Gave me an offer sheet, and it was a pretty good deal, most definitely, with a lot of respect. And I told them that, you know, I wanted to take a couple visits just to see other markets and see how things are on the other side of the field.
Yeah.
And I went to visit Orlando. And, you know, obviously they had Dwight Howard at the time, Jameel Nelson, good young up-and-coming team. Mm-hmm. But around that time, I just felt like with the Lakers and the Spurs being so dominant over that decade, I just feel like you have to have a big man to compete for a title. Mm-hmm. You got to have a solid big man, and I felt like Dwight was perfect and took that visit, and it was almost a no-brainer when they said that they was willing to, you know, sign me, do a sign and trade, or just sign me outright. And I was just excited to have a dominant big man in the league, and it helped. You know, we went to the finals, and we were successful with a great coach in Stan Van Gundy, and we had a good run there in Seattle. Yeah. Lost to the Lakers, but... We, of course, Kobe Bryant.
Went to the finals. That was another team when we talked about spreading out the floor. I remember watching a game and seeing Dwight down low and then four shooters standing around the three-point line. I was like, oh, this is how basketball is played.
Yeah. Because kind of us in Phoenix started that small ball in Seattle. So when I went to Orlando, when Coach decided to move me to the four but spread the floor, you know, it was easy for me to adjust into that role because I did it when I was in Seattle. And it was perfect, especially with Dwight being a dominant post player.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't play him one-on-one, but if you double-team him, one of us is going to knock down the three ball.
Yeah.
So it worked out.
So quickly, I think this is our last question here, but I mean, you kind of ran through everything, basically, you leaving the team. Going into that draft, mm-hmm. were you expecting to stay in Seattle and have a team of Ray, you, and Kevin Durant?
That summer, you mean that when the summer Ray was traded?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Going into that free agency that summer, most definitely expecting to come back to the Seattle Sonics. You know, I obviously knew we had Ray Allen. I think Nick Collins was still here, as well as Luke, myself. We lost a couple pieces. I think Desmond Mason was traded off to Milwaukee. But you know, was excited about. I think it was Greg Oden, Kevin Durant. So he's like, you know, all right. Which one of these guys are we going to get that we're going to be able to play with? How is it going to fit? What can we do to get better? And then, obviously, when Ray got Durant, you know, was excited about that, him being from Texas, and I'm growing up in Houston, knew what type of player he was. But when Ray was traded to the Celtics, it was just like a pop in a balloon. It let all the air out of me. You know, I'm sitting there watching the draft, excited about who we're drafting, and then when I see his name pop up on there, it just kind of changed everything for me.
Yeah, well, fortunately, you guys were able to reunite in Miami and win a championship.
Exactly. It was funny you say that because that free agency after I left Washington, D.C., when I was traded to D.C. for Gilbert Arenas, and I did a year there, and then I became a free agent. And I had talked to Pat Riley. He obviously called to recruit me, and I was getting ready to go to Atlanta the next day, and I was going to take a visit to Miami after that. But Ray, I guess he was on his trip in Miami at the time, so he called me, and he was like, Rashad. I was like, what's up? He's like, man, Pat just told me that they're recruiting you. Like, you thinking about coming here? And I was like, yeah, I talked to Pat yesterday. I was supposed to come out there next week. I'm getting ready to go to Atlanta tomorrow. He was like, man, you need to cancel that Atlanta trip. He was like, you need to cancel that trip. You need to come here to Miami. He was like, you want to win a championship, right? What are you going to do in Atlanta? Y'all not going to beat us. So I was like, you know what, Ray? I was like, you know what? You're 100% right, man. Let me talk to my agent and figure out. And, you know, because it was more of Atlanta wanted me to come. They was obviously promising me minutes and this and that and starting. But I was at a point in my career, like, I didn't care about playing 40 minutes or if I'm going to be starting to come off the bench. It was more about winning, being on a winning team and trying to win a championship. And then when I found out Ray was going to the Miami Heat, which they already had, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron James, who in the hell is going to beat them? I'm like, Ray, you're right. You know what? Let me call you back because if you going to Miami, then I'm most definitely coming out there. And we got back together. You know, it was great because I knew him from Seattle. My wife, his wife, you know, we knew each other's family. His mom and my mom are really close friends. So it was almost like perfect.
Yeah, well, it was fun to cheer you guys on from afar for Sonics fans, but now very exciting to have the chance to do it again right here at Key Arena.
Yeah,
so.
I'm happy. I'm excited, and unfortunately, Ray couldn't be with me this year. But next year, hopefully, we're coming back to Key Arena, and I'm going to try to get Ray to play with me. I know he really wanted to play this year, but I think next year I'll be able to get him. I mean, he still trains every day like he's playing in the NBA. He runs miles. He rides the bike. I mean, he's by far, I bet, one of the most in-shape guys at his age.
For sure. Yeah. So Sunday, 2 p.m. at Key Arena. You can get tickets online or at the box office to take advantage of that ability to bring a child under 13 and get in for free. And thank you very much for the time, Rashad.
Oh,
I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me, man. I'm just excited to be back in Seattle.